Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Our guest on today's program is Roger Corville, author of The Virtual Presenter's Handbook. He's also editor of the 1080 Group Web Seminar Producers Toolkit, a blogger at virtualpresenter.com, and of course, he's principal of the 1080 Group, which he co-founded. Roger, welcome to Edgewise.
My pleasure, Dave.
So how do electronic presentations differ from traditional live presentations?
If we move that live presentation into the virtual environment, there's things that are different. We still need to understand who our audience is and exactly what we want their takeaways to be, what the purpose of the presentation is. But the execution tends to be different if we embrace a new medium as a new opportunity to reach people in new ways. One example, attention spans are shorter online than offline. So if anyone has ever attended a webinar or webcast or web seminar, whatever you want to call it, in a live context, you probably found yourself, if it wasn't a terribly interesting one, feeling maybe nobody's going to notice if I sneak over here and check email while the presenter goes blah, 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 blah. So there are certain tactics that we might attack differently, how we create or arrange our content, how we design the visuals in terms of our slides, and how we engage people. So process, the same. Execution, probably a little bit different.
And what about slides? Anything specific there?
Those slides that are part of telling your story or communicating are certainly a critical part of the process. That's a key part to adapt content for in real practical ways. One of those things is thinking through the difference in the audience experience. Mm-hmm. You're not standing there in front of them waving your hands. It is the web conferencing tool that becomes the environment, the virtual room. And I can assure you that death by bullet point that we joke about offline is only that much more painful online. So certainly how we approach engaging people visually becomes more important.
So how do you make it work? How do you put this presentation together?
If you're making a virtual presentation in a shorter attention span environment, one common challenge is what is the right amount of stuff to say and what's the right thing to say to kick off a web-based presentation. And bear in mind, this is not just a web seminar problem. It's a cultural problem. Sociologists have discovered that attention spans are shorter now than they were 20 or 40 years ago.
Interesting.
One of the things that I know from my own research is people don't appreciate long-winded openings or any of the self-interested stuff like the slide that says, here's all of our customers around the world. No, they want you to get to the point.
Exactly. And then we have the visual experience.
Exactly right.
Can you talk about that?
When we think about our slides and those visuals, remember that people can read 4 to 7 times more quickly than you tend to speak. The challenge that presents is if you put all that stuff on a slide in the same old way, they can just glance over it and know what you're going to say. They're not missing anything if they go back to working on that email or the 17 emails that came in since the beginning of your webinar and only occasionally check back in, which is a missed opportunity for you as a presenter. Next, I would plan where and how you will talk with them. Mm-hmm. Not talk at them, talk with them. We wouldn't generally get on a telephone conference call and talk at everybody. We talk with them. On the flip side, many webinars are very much broadcasts, which is another missed opportunity. And if you are not in the broadcast business, you're not studying how you get and keep attention like a television producer, then one of the easiest things to do is plan to dialogue with my audience, ask a question, get some feedback by a virtual show of hands, whether it's a hand-up feature or a poll.
Right. So why is it important?
Because the goal is effective communication. And since most of us don't like public speaking, our adrenaline goes up. We tend to forget those things like, I was going to ask them that question there. So put that in the planning phase. Third, certainly rehearsing. We're doing that in a new space. Summer 2009, I conducted a study where I asked two related questions. I said, where do you feel more prepared to succeed, online or offline? And then I asked, where do you spend more time preparing? And probably not surprisingly, people are more prepared to make presentations offline, but that's also where they spend more time. So if you're not as prepared and you're going into an unfamiliar environment, invariably your delivery is going to suffer if you've not made appropriate accommodation.
All right. Is a conversational style or a more structured discussion type of approach an effective way to approach your audience when you're online?
It's critical to talk with people in a natural way. In fact, it's a missed opportunity that comes from an unfamiliarity with the tools.
So what exactly do you suggest?
What would you attempt to accomplish in person with the same group of people if time and distance and money wasn't an issue? Is it a meeting? Is it a seminar? Is it a keynote presentation? Is it a product demo or a training session? Most of those communication models are discussions with people in some context, with probably the exception being an inspirational speech by the CEO.
Right.
If those are communication scenarios, now we move that into the online space. Let's use the webinar, for example. Most of us would feel cheated if we went to an in-person seminar and didn't get to ask any questions, or they talked at us and never gave us a chance to raise our hand or do some kind of a workshop exercise, and yet that's what happens all the time in webinars.
So to engage your audience, you use questions.
There's several ways that audiences are engaged. They're certainly engaged with content that is relevant and will even suffer a bad presenter for great content. They're engaged visually. We know this from other media forms like television and movies. There's a reason people sit down and watch a movie. Mm-hmm. Part of it's the story, part of it's the visuals. But in virtual presentations, part of it is interactivity with the presenter or trainer or facilitator. It was funny, I was just reading an article online this morning by a major leadership publication saying, too often, unfortunately, one of the challenges that leaders have is they get grudging buy-in, but then employees go do what they want to do anyway. Their answer to that is dialogue. How are you going to be an effective leader if you're not dialoguing with people? That's one of our great challenges in virtual presentations as well, because when we talk at someone, we miss a great opportunity to not only draw them in and make it more engaging, but we'll learn something ourselves.
Well, that means you have to know who your audience is.
Absolutely.
So what do you need to know about the audience to make this work?
First question I would always ask is, what are they going to get out of it? People are motivated to learn what they want to learn.
Okay.
A couple weeks ago, I made a presentation about 800 people, and I actually started the webcast saying, hey, have you ever gone out and on your own, with your own money and your own time, learned something? And somebody says, yep, parenting skills. And somebody says, I'm learning to speak Chinese. And somebody says, golf. Why? And the answer is, of course, because we're motivated. So the better you can describe for someone the potential benefit to them for attending, the better off you're going to be. And you can't do that without knowing your audience.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You can't educate someone if you don't know who they are. It's not data dump. It's helping somebody get from point A to point B in a mutually beneficial way.
It's particularly important if you're dealing with people from different cultures.
Yes. Different people learn different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Learners are auditory, kinesthetic, or visual, all three most of the time, but we lean in a certain direction. But cultures have different ways of approaching those kinds of things. For example, what does color mean when they look at your slide? In the United States, for instance, it means danger or stop. In China, it means happy. So how might you use color?
Mm-hmm.
Are they a more direct or indirect culture? Some cultures, especially in Asia Pacific, are considerably more indirect in the way they respond to authority or interact with someone at the head of the classroom. I've spoken to an audience in Singapore and had them be very quiet. And I thought they hated me because they didn't ask me any questions or wouldn't respond in real time.
Yeah.
What I later learned was they loved the presentation, but that's what they considered to be polite. And then there are sometimes subcultures in companies. So always good to ask more questions than fewer about your audience.
Absolutely. Roger, how do you plan the illustrations and graphics for a presentation?
This is a key thing when I do workshops that everybody really likes, and then nobody thinks they have any talent in.
And how do you respond to that?
I think everybody has talent. Now, we're not all illustrators or designers or graphic artists, but here's what I do know. We're all visual. So barring some kind of disability, we are visual creatures by nature. More than half of our brain, according to John Medina, who wrote Brain Rules, New York Times bestseller, is wired for visual processing. We all have instinct visually. Now, some are more gifted, but that doesn't mean we can't learn. So I approach it from a design for non-designers perspective.
Uh-huh.
What are those key elements that anybody can use? One is start with one simple idea. So when you take that PowerPoint slide and you go, what does this slide need to say? It's hard enough with one idea, let alone if I have multiple ideas. The second is, what am I trying to communicate? Is it position or spatiality? Is there supposed to be an image that tells part of the picture? Is there a time sequence? Is there relationship or category among those things that I'm trying to communicate? And I don't think visuals have to be photographs. It can be the way two arrows are positioned, and arrows are really easy to make in PowerPoint, but they communicate more and sometimes more quickly than the words themselves. So how do I think visually and move in the direction of representing things in a way that assists understanding, helps people remember, and might even be more persuasive or tell the story better?
Exactly. Now, what advice would you give to people to provide the best delivery?
Number one, get familiar with the tools. I hate to even start there because I'm not about the tools. I think communication is about soft skills. And by analogy, we don't think about having a phone. We think about delivering customer service or calling grandma. Because web conferencing might be new or at least uncomfortable, it gets in the way, which is why we tend to think about it.
So what is the advice there?
Step one, I would invite a friend, whether it's over the wall in the cube farm or just call somebody and say, when I push this button, what do you see? When you submit a question or put your virtual hand up, what do I see?
Yep.
No different than a meeting planner getting familiar with the room and where the signs should go and where to put the table with the coffee and the water. It's getting familiar with your virtual room. Second would be voice. I've done more than one study about behavior in the world of presenting virtually, and voice ranks very highly. Now, we can't change what we were born with.
Of course.
But we can change how well we use what we were born with. If you can improve how well you use your voice, you can deliver better meaning and impact, if not memorability.
Right.
Finally, if you don't do anything else with regard to that technology, I would figure out, where do they submit questions? How do I tell them to submit a question? Where do we chat? Or how do I see that somebody's got their hand up so I can pause and go, Dave, I see you've got your hand up. Let me get to the end of my next section and then I'll get back to your question.
Right.
However you would do that offline is what you want to begin to do online.
Now, I'm just curious, what's the biggest mistake people make when presenting online?
Interestingly, one of the demographic categories that make some of the lousiest online presentations is very senior executives, because they've already got the charisma that got them to wherever they are in their life or their business. So they don't think they have to rehearse, and they don't think I have to adapt. They think I'm going to get on the phone, I'm going to do my thing, and everybody's going to love me.
So how do you address that problem?
First is self-awareness, being aware of what I've got to get done. And now how do I adapt that, and what do I need to do to close my own learning gap? Not everybody's always conscious about what they do. Where do I ask a question, or how do I interact with my audience? It's sometimes unconscious because we might have been doing it for 45 years offline. And now, how might I adapt that online? Clearly, some things don't adapt. Can't take apart and reassemble an engine in an online seminar. But some things do adapt, and or some things adapt and are better online. And I use that example because one of my clients is an auto parts manufacturer who's training automobile mechanics using webinars. Now, clearly they can't do every part of their training course online, but they're reaching hundreds of mechanics every week in webinars doing training about other things like how to diagnose a fuel problem in a Ford pickup.
Okay, let's take a look at questions and answers.
I handle Q&A the same way I do in person. I don't wait to take questions. I answer questions throughout, provided they're on topic. If they are not on topic, I ask somebody to wait till the end or see me after the class, because nobody wants presenters to go off topic. But if it's relevant, there's no better time to take the question than right there on the spot. And to me, that's one of the things you can do better online, because sometimes you can see that Bill, Julie, Greta, and Dave asked a similar question, meaning I can hit a broader part of the target.
Right. But how do you do that?
The way that I do that, and I've done this with 1,000 people online, is keep a running scroll. And whether or not you get some help, like a moderator, really is one, a function of your own experience and skill, and two, how deeply you want to get there. So one of the things that I do is remind everybody about the context of the virtual audience they're sitting in. So if somebody's in a room of 300 people and 30 hands go up, they all understand that you're not going to get to them all because you've got to move on. But depending on how you've configured the technology, they may not see that online. So I just remind them, I'm not going to get to all your questions. I will stick around late. And you're welcome to send me an email. And that's how I tackle it. Now, because it's a new environment, sometimes a partner is very useful, whether that's a moderator or a co-presenter or just someone who sits with you behind the scenes and fields through the questions and tees them up for you, however you want to manage that logistically. Now, it may be a big deal if there's 18 people in the audience, maybe a lot bigger deal if there's 180 or 500 people in the audience.
Right, right. So last question I have to wrap up is, how do you close a presentation?
What would you do to wrap up any presentation? General wisdom in the world of public speaking is close with strength and clarity. Don't dribble on going, okay, do you have any more questions?
Right.
Close it up, tell them what you want to do, and move on. Now, at the end of a webinar, you may have a moderator who comes on and goes, thank you, Dave, for being here. And just a reminder to our audience, our next association meeting is next week on Thursday night, and whatever other closing comments they may have. The one thing I would suggest is that a moderator always give a very clear indicator of when it's done. Just say, you may now disconnect.
Our guest has been Roger Corville. Roger is an authority on how to deliver electronic presentations. Thanks a lot, Roger.
Thank you very much, and I hope everybody has a great day.
Today's business climate adds a new layer of uncertainty and accountability, making performance management even tougher to navigate. AMA has developed a new seminar, Performance Management, Minimizing Stress, Maximizing Effectiveness, which gives new managers a time-tested roadmap for developing and reviewing performance that aligns with rapidly changing priorities and organizational goals. For more information on this seminar, visit our website, amanet.org, and type 2822 into the search box. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.